are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Independence Day. Happy 4th of July weekend. And hopefully you are having a good one out there, staying cool. I know it's really hot in a lot of parts of the country, including where I live. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. All right, today we are still kind of deviating from our big board series because we're waiting for Monday. We will run the crossover mock draft that I did with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Warriors and Matt Shook of Locked On Pistons. So that will be coming on Monday morning. Today, I want to talk about the latest NBA news, especially related to this apparent bubble in Chicago that is now likely to happen involving the Timberwolves and the seven other non-Orlando bubble teams. So I want to talk a little bit about that news. And then I want to get into the 2009 draft. Bill Simmons over on The Ringer, or on the Bill Simmons podcast on The Ringer, and also Zach Lowe's podcast over at ESPN, they did a crossover redraftable podcast of the 2009 draft. That, of course, is a memorable and very painful draft in Timberwolves history. So we definitely need to relive that here for a little bit. And so that will be the second part of our conversation here today at Locked On Wolves. First, before we get into everything, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right. So related to the Chicago bubble, or actually before we get to that, I touched on this in yesterday's show, the transaction window that ended earlier this week. The Timberwolves did not take advantage of that window. They still have a roster spot. They're still in the tax by, I think, a little under $500,000 in the luxury tax. There is also, notably, there's a trade moratorium currently for the non-Orlando teams. The thinking is, and this is according again to Bobby Marks from ESPN, the former front office member of the Brooklyn Nets, that there are no teams currently permitted to make trades. That includes the eight that aren't in Orlando. The transaction moratorium for those teams will remain in place until mid-August, something maybe right around where the first round of the playoffs will get underway on August 17th. It looks like, according to Bobby Marks, the non-playoff teams, so the eight non-Orlando teams plus the six teams that are in Orlando that don't make the actual playoffs, so that's a total of 14 teams, would be allowed to make trades, waive players, and sign players to contract extensions beginning August 17th, is the thinking. It's not official yet. So no transactions for the Wolves for the next 6 weeks or so. Obviously, the NBA draft lottery is happening around the same time. I don't have the exact date in front of me, but it's right around the start of the playoffs in mid-August. And the draft, of course, isn't until October. So no transactions for the Wolves for the next 6 weeks or so, now that they missed out on that window and chose not to make any moves. The big news related to the Timberwolves, though, is it came out on Thursday afternoon. Adrian Wojnarowski over at ESPN first reported that the NBA is seriously considering a plan to host the eight non-Orlando teams in Chicago. It, of course, wouldn't be quite as formalized as what's going on in Orlando from a basketball perspective. There's not likely to be an official schedule or tournament, at least not, there's not going to be any big TV deals, for instance. But the issue with something like this that immediately comes to mind is, well, obviously the risk of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is ongoing and spiking, actually much worse in Florida than it is, I believe, in the Chicago area. But there's that risk. Why do that risk with teams that aren't going to be in the playoffs? It's already kind of a little iffy as it is in Florida. And then on top of that, if you're not going to make any money on TV deals, the figures, I think it was $150 million. It was well into the hundreds of millions, the cost of the bubble in Orlando. And of course, the NBA thinks they'll come out ahead because of the TV deals and all that. But without that, why the risk, why take on the risk and why spend the dollars to try and make a safe environment in Chicago for eight non-playoff teams? It appears, according to Wojnarowski and then also to Jackie McMullen at ESPN, that there'd be something like mini training camps and inter-squad games in Chicago. I'm sure some of it would be televised. Again, in my mind, I'm thinking Las Vegas Summer League, where it's, it's not the full production of an NBA game. It might be, who knows what venues they'd use outside of the United Center if there'd be college gyms that are in use and, you know, probably like summer league style uniforms or practice jerseys or whatever. Maybe there's some games that are televised. I'm thinking there probably would be, but basically we're looking at glorified practices and scrimmages. So why take on that risk for no reason outside of getting these teams together? And clearly we've talked about this here at Lockdown Wolves. A lot of these teams have been making some noise about not being involved. Atlanta, Minnesota, most notably Detroit to some extent. And so they wanted to be involved in something. And we talked about how Minnesota actually raised their hand and said, let's host this in Minneapolis in the Twin Cities. It sounds like Chicago is the leader in the clubhouse when it comes to that, where they'd host it. And then there's other teams like Golden State who apparently are not interested in participating. Of course, they have a roster primarily of, you know, veteran stars and then also some younger guys, but they're the only one of the eight teams that don't have any pending free agents on their roster. But according to Anthony Slater of The Athletic, their preference has been to hold a controlled mini camp in the Bay Area, and they don't want to be in, they want to travel to Chicago for what's essentially a summer league, a summer camp. And you know, Steph Curry's probably not going to participate. He's not going to get anything out of that. There's a few young guys on the Warriors roster who might, but I'm sure Steve Kerr would rather control his team in the Bay Area instead of traveling to Chicago and, you know, taking on some of that additional risk. So it's understandable for a team like that. Teams like Atlanta and Minnesota want to get their young players as much exposure as they can, and perhaps Karl Anthony Towns sits out, and this is more of a, hey, let's get Josh Okogie and Jarrett Culver and Jordan McLaughlin and Naz Reid. Let's give those guys some run. Maybe let's see if they can convince, you know, I mean, Juancho Hernan Gomez and Malik Beasley are both restricted free agents. Do they risk injury participating in something like this? You know, when they're about to get out there and try and sign some offer sheets here in just a couple of months. So it'll be interesting to see what the level of participation is. Apparently there was an NBA call the other day and seven of the eight teams participated on the call, including the Warriors and the New York Knicks for whatever reason. There's no reason given, but they were not on the call, which seems very Knicks-y, but, I don't know. It'll be fascinating to see what level of buy-in there is, how excited these teams are to participate in something that has so much inherent risk and very little upside. Many of those same conditions that they'll have in Chicago could be replicated in each team's individual city. And perhaps there's, you know, the Wolves could have the Bulls up to Minnesota, or the Wolves and Bulls could go to Chicago and play some inter-squad, or Detroit, maybe Detroit and Charlotte get together, Detroit and Cleveland, you know, think of these regionally, find two teams at a time that participate, perhaps the Warriors. I mean, they're the only team further west than Minnesota in that bottom eight. Maybe the Warriors just sit it out and everybody else finds a team to pair up with, and maybe Detroit, Cleveland, and Chicago get together, or Detroit, Cleveland, and Minnesota, and they have their own little three-team tournament or something like that. It feels like there could be a better solution than getting everyone to one location and having that risk level go up, and again, with very little reward. So it's strange. I'm not going to complain about it from a fan perspective, and it definitely gives us something to talk about. It looks like this would be in September. So leading up to it and then during the actual event in September, it's going to be fun to cover it, fun to talk about it. But it's questionable to me what the motives are behind this and how many of these teams are really fully behind something like this. Of course, I'm sure this would be relatively tentative, and you know, if things continue to get worse pandemic-wise, I'm sure this is something that course could be reversed on as we get closer. But at any rate, this is definitely something to keep an eye on. Fascinating that this is now happening, and really surprising. And I think surprising to a lot of folks around the league, but that's where we're at. All right. So before we get into talking about the 2009 redraft and the podcast over at The Ringer and on ESPN, where the 2009 redraft was discussed, I did want to talk about our great friends at Magic Spoon. Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid, but I had to start eating a lot less of it because I realized it was full of sugar and junk that you really shouldn't eat. I've been trying to cut down on sugar and unhealthy food in general and realized I basically can't eat anything anymore. But Magic Spoon cereal has 0 grams of sugar, 12 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. There are 4 flavors available, from cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. It tastes amazing. Honestly, it tastes too good to be true for a cereal that is so healthy. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. Go to magicspoon.com/NBA to grab a variety pack and try it today. Be sure to use our promo code NBA at checkout to get free shipping. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That's magicspoon.com/NBA. Use the code NBA for free shipping. We thank Magic Spoon, as always, for sponsoring this podcast. I also want to talk about our good friends, our friends for a while now at Blinkist. Let me tell you about my secret weapon for learning new things and getting ahead. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. With Blinkist, you can get unlimited access to read or listen to that massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. Okay, it's that time to talk about the 2009 draft. This can be a painful draft to talk about for Timberwolves fans, certainly, and I remember it extremely well. We talked about it a little bit on this podcast a few weeks ago, and we were going back and looking at some of the past Timberwolves moves and trades. Best and worst moves in Wolves history. We'll get into the main Wolves trade leading up to this draft here in a minute. But this, so the reason why we're talking about this is the Bill Simmons, I said earlier it was actually the Bill Simmons podcast. It was actually his Book of Basketball 2.0 podcast. One of the more recent episodes was the crossover with Zach Lowe from ESPN. Of course, the two used to work at Grantland, the ESPN subsite, together. And they did this crossover podcast. It's a really fun listen, actually. They go back and redraft the whole draft. It's part of a series that Simmons has been doing over at the Book of Basketball 2.0. But the 09 draft is probably the one that's most relevant for Timberwolves fans. And frankly, and maybe I'm a little biased because the Wolves were so central to the narrative of this draft, but it's one of the most exciting drafts and more intriguing draft nights, and also just kind of a really stacked draft class to look back at, even if it's not super star heavy. I mean, there's a couple guys, a couple of future Hall of Famers in it, but there's just a lot of depth. I mean, there's guys that didn't get picked in this redraft lottery that are still solid NBA regulars on good teams. So it's a fun draft to talk about. If you get the opportunity, go listen to that podcast. It's a fun listen. But what I wanted to do is hit a couple of the picks that they made, and also, of course, talk about, you know, they talk about David Kahn and the Timberwolves. They talk about the Wolves trade to land the fifth pick. And there's also a long conversation about Ricky Rubio. And I think it's notable where he was drafted, as well as some other recent Timberwolves that were in that draft. Jeff Teague, another current Timberwolf that was in that draft and was drafted actually in the lottery at the time in real life, James Johnson. So there's a lot of Timberwolves related narratives surrounding the 09 draft. So I think they basically start, Simmons and Lowe do, by talking about some of the moves leading up to the draft and the way that the draft sets up and the narratives. This is, of course, David Kahn's first draft in charge. He has yet to hire a head coach. And he's only been on the job for a little over a month. And at the time, I remember reading Bill Simmons, and Simmons was making fun of him as a Timberwolves fan. And, you know, a decade younger and a decade, I guess, less wise than I am now, I've felt defensive about it, because who's to say David Kahn's not going to be a great GM? And lo and behold, the first move he makes as the president of basketball operations of the Minnesota Timberwolves is to trade two veterans on expiring contracts who have had injury issues, Randy Foy, Mike Miller, to the Washington Wizards for the number 5 pick in the draft, which is just the craziest thing. We talked about this a few weeks ago on this podcast, and the more I thought about it, the crazier I realized it was that this isn't talked about more as one of the worst slash best draft trades or just trades in recent NBA history. The reason I think it's not talked about more is because the Wolves then messed up the actual draft. However, what this could have been, I mean, the Wizards basically traded the opportunity to draft Steph Curry for 1 year of Mike Miller and Randy Foy. Remember, Miller was a three-point shooter who was apparently afraid to squeeze the trigger in Minnesota, had injury issues. Randy Foy was an underachieving guy who the Wolves had taken, you know, traded for on draft night, traded Brandon Roy for him. Foy was a good player, and he ended up being a pretty solid, like, you know, seventh or eighth man, kind of a combo guard that came off the bench for some good playoff teams and was in the league until just a couple years ago. But at the time, this trade didn't make any sense. And the Wizards, and this is something that Lowe and Simmons go into a little bit on the podcast, the Wizards at the time thought they had a big three, and they didn't, but it was some combination of Antoine Jameson and Andre Blatch and an injured Gilbert Arenas, and they thought that they were going to add some pieces to this and be a playoff team. And ironically, somewhat, Flip Saunders is the head coach of this team. Of course, he's not the GM, but no doubt was on board with this trade. So the Wolves land the number five pick for a couple of expiring contracts of often injured veterans who'd been underachieving with Minnesota. So this is a slam dunk of a trade for David Kahn. And at the time, I'm thinking, maybe this guy's a genius. How did he convince the Wizards to do this? So coming into the draft, the Wolves have the 5 and 6 pick. And Simmons and Lowe do a great job of kind of discussing, you know, the narrative headed into the draft. Blake Griffin at this point was now kind of the consensus number one overall pick. And the other kind of the questions were, you know, who would take Hashim to beat? Would he go second to Memphis or third to Oklahoma City? Or, you know, the Wolves liked him if he slipped to five. Where would Ricky Rubio go? There was a lot of thought that Memphis would take him second, or if they didn't, OKC would certainly take him third. There were also rumors that he didn't want to go to Memphis or Oklahoma City, that his preference was to go to Sacramento, who had the fourth pick, because it was in California. And that's another thing that Lowe mentions on this podcast. So kind of the thought was wherever Rubio went, that would dictate where to beat and Curry went and possibly James Harden. He was kind of a fast riser who came out of nowhere and people didn't really know where he would go. And the Wolves, of course, have 5 and 6. And sitting there, I think there was some noise that they liked Johnny Flynn. Everyone knew they liked Rubio. Everyone knew they liked to beat. And there was this thought that they might try and trade up to make sure they got one of those guys. And Memphis was trying to get maybe 5 and 6 from the Wolves to get to 2. But to Kahn's credit, he stood pat and was like, well, I'll just get two guys that I like and stay at 5 and 6. There were some other teams trying to move up, and the Wolves didn't cave. They kept their picks. So the way the draft plays out, of course, Griffin goes first. Hashim Tabeek goes second to Memphis. And of course, we all know that absolutely did not work out for the Memphis Grizzlies. And then third, the Thunder surprise everybody and take James Harden third, which leaves all of the guys that everybody was curious about, Rubio, Curry, as well as Tyreke Evans, still on the board. And then Sacramento takes Evans at 4, which was a shock. I think at that point, everyone assumed they were going to take Rubio, which leaves Rubio for the Wolves at 5. And then everyone just assumes, well, you know, yeah, they liked Flynn, but Rubio and Curry are both here. Of course, they're going to take Rubio and Curry. The Wolves take Rubio. So everyone's like, okay, well, we know that they were going to do that. Now you take Curry. You can play him at the 2. He plays point guard maybe if Rubio doesn't come over right away. And there's like this 5 minutes where everybody's psyched that the Wolves are going to get both guys. And then the Timberwolves stick with their board and take Johnny Flynn. And of course, in the years since, David Kahn has said, yeah, Curry was high on our board too, but we had Rubio and Flynn. You know, they were the guys we wanted all along, basically. And for whatever reason, Flynn was ahead of Curry on their board. And it's defensible in the sense that Johnny Flynn had a decent rookie year, was good until he got hurt. He was an okay prospect. It's not defensible in that virtually everybody else still had Curry ahead of Flynn. Had Curry not been on the board, I don't think that pick, I mean, and in the moment, it still looks weird because they're both point guards. But it's not like Johnny Flynn, nobody thought he was going... It was pretty widely accepted that he was going to be a good NBA player. Everybody thought he was a solid prospect. And what the Wolves did was obviously, in hindsight, horrible, leaving Curry on the board for the Golden State Warriors. If they had drafted Curry, there likely would have been the same question marks of could Rubio and Curry play together? And the answer, in hindsight, certainly is yes. But the fact that David Kahn let a guy who, at the time, people realize if things click, he could be a transcendent shooter. He left him on the board for the Warriors and took Johnny Flynn. It was just unconscionable. And then, of course, he went on this tour, and Simmons talks about this on the podcast, of trying to compare it to the Knicks of the 70s, or I remember distinctively him comparing it to the Bad Boy Pistons and Thomas and Dumars in the backcourt, and some of these different spins that Khan tried to put on things. But in reality, it was just a terrible decision and questionable, beyond questionable at the time. So Simmons and Lowe do their redraft, and clearly, whoever's going to go 1-2 in whatever order, that was pretty obvious. And so Bill Simmons had the first pick. He takes Curry. Lowe takes Harden second. They have a debate about, you know, could you flip them? Basically, they said, yeah, you could, but they both agreed that Curry should go ahead of Harden. Blake Griffin goes third. And then it gets interesting because you have a bunch of guys who all have had good careers on various levels. Most of them haven't necessarily made all-star teams, nobody more than one, and they've all had various levels of success. So, and we're talking about, you know, you look at the guys who actually were picked in this draft. We're talking about Rubio. You're talking about Jrue Holiday, DeRozan, Ty Lawson, Taj Gibson, Jeff Teague, just a bunch of guys who you could really kind of shuffle depending on your preference or what type of team you're building. Lowe goes with Jrue Holiday fourth, which is defensible, not where I would have gone. Simmons takes DeMar DeRozan fifth, and they have a conversation about DeRozan being, you know, Lowe doesn't like the fact that he's not been a good defender for the most part for his career. He won't shoot threes. And Simmons, of course, errs on the side of a two guard that can get you 20 a game, which is, you know, the difference, I guess, between Lowe and Simmons is Simmons is always going to take the volume score. And Lowe has a little bit of more nuance to his analysis, which is why he's taking Holiday at four, which surprised Simmons. That leaves Ricky Rubio on the board for Zach Lowe to take him at six. And Lowe makes the case. He would have taken him fifth over DeMar DeRozan. And basically, the case for this is that not only has Rubio turned into a solid NBA player, there was at least a 20% chance in Lowe's estimation, or at least the number he threw out there, that Rubio was going to turn into a superstar, and that the situation in Minnesota combined with the injuries, you know, the initial torn ACL, some of the ankle injuries he's had, kept him from reaching that potential. And if you play his career 20 times, this is probably the worst case scenario. It's basically where Lowe and Simmons land on Rubio's career. And that's the case for taking him sixth in this draft. So looking back on it, the Wolves actually took him fifth, and he ended up being, in their estimation, the sixth best player in this draft overall. So the Rubio selection, of course, itself is defensible. And then if they also make the point that in their redraft, the Wolves end up with DeRozan and Rubio, which is, I guess, still better than Rubio and Flynn, but similar to what actually happened. The other part of this that was really interesting was the way that they ranked some of these other guys, and there's two more guys that they talk about that are both former Timberwolves that just recently were on the Wolves. And then also another guy that they drafted and traded. And there's a guy that I would talk about who's currently on the Wolves. I mentioned it a little bit ago that I think I would take in the top 14 of this draft. So I want to get into that next and just kind of talk about the overall, the depth of this draft and just how impressive it was, you know, through and through. There's a few busts here and there, obviously a few reaches, a few guys that didn't pan out at all, but that's the case with any draft. But there's throughout this draft, there's guys, there's names of people that were successful NBA rotation players for much of their career, and many of them are still in the NBA today. And I think that that's notable. So before we do that, let's talk about our friends at rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person at the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand that their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, again, we are talking about the 2009 Redraftables podcast that Zach Lowe and Bill Simmons did over on Zach Lowe's podcast, The Low Post on ESPN, and Bill Simmons' Book of Basketball 2.0. They did a crossover episode and talked about the 2009 draft. And they took Ricky Rubio sixth, which I think makes a lot of sense. And the other part of this that I thought was interesting is as they went through the draft, and I'm not going to read off every single pick because this is a Wolves podcast and they're not all relevant, but I think it's worth a listen if you have the opportunity. There's a few other names in here. Ty Lawson went eighth to Zach Lowe, which is interesting and a little bit high, but his point was that the ceiling of Ty Lawson, depending on the culture that he ended up in, and of course he bounced around a little bit, had some problems in Denver, had some off the court issues and some weight problems and things like that. If you play out Ty Lawson's career, the ceiling that Lawson has is higher than a lot of the other guys. And of course, the Wolves did draft Ty Lawson. They drafted him for the Denver Nuggets. They selected him at number 18. Remember, the Wolves had four first-round picks, 5, 6, 18, and 28. 18 is the only one that they traded, and they traded it for a future first for the following year, which I believe is the pick that they actually ended up taking Luke Babbitt and trading him directly from Martell Webster from Portland. But they traded the 18th pick, which was Ty Lawson, to Denver. And so he was officially a Wolves pick at 18. Coincidentally, the next pick, number 19, was Jeff Teague, who we'll get to here in just a minute. So Ty Lawson goes 8 to Zach Lowe. And then Simmons at number 9 takes Taj Gibson, of course, who just spent not this past year, but the previous 2 years in Minnesota. Lowe said that he had him 14th on his board. So they both had him in the lottery, which made sense. Taj Gibson's been one of the better kind of glue big men, maybe like a third big type guy on some good teams. I mean, he made the playoffs, I think every year he was in Chicago, the first year in Minnesota. And then of course now has been on a bad Wolves teams last year and a bad Knicks team this year. But the respect for Taj Gibson is enormous and it makes a lot of sense. In this draft, Taj was actually picked number 26 by Chicago in this draft. But if you look at his win shares and a lot of his other statistics, it makes sense that he would be picked absolutely somewhere in the lottery. Nine feels a little early, but certainly in the lottery. And then a couple of other picks came off the board. Simmons kept talking about how he didn't want to take Jeff Teague. Lowe eventually takes Teague at number 12 because he was the highest player on his board and talks about how his peak, when he was an all-star a few years ago with Atlanta, he was one of the best probably 10 or 11 point guards in the league, which is true. And he was solid in Minnesota before he got hurt. It just didn't really fit the scheme. And in hindsight, I think Rubio fits that team a lot better, but with what Tom Thibodeau wanted to do. Of course, he traded Rubio for the pick that they ultimately took Josh Okogie with the following year. And Teague, spent a year, I guess, two seasons in Minnesota, two plus seasons, and had some injuries that first year, which was part of the reason that they struggled, down the stretch of that season. Teague had missed a few weeks with a knee injury right before Butler got hurt. But I completely agreed with their assessment of Teague's career that basically it always felt like there was something more he could do. He could kick it up another notch, and he wasn't consistent enough. In Minnesota, it was the sloppy turnovers on entry passes. It was the refusal to take wide open 3-point shots, despite the fact he was really an above average 3-point shooter when he actually did pull the trigger. Those things, along with some lackadaisical defense, were the reasons why he had a disappointing career in Minnesota, and also the fact that he replaced a beloved franchise, icon's maybe a strong word, but probably the best overall point guard in Timberwolves history in terms of longevity and the numbers in Ricky Rubio. He was in a tough spot, but didn't exactly perform up to expectations in Minnesota after he was given a big contract by Tom Thibodeau. And then the rest of this draft, Patrick Beverley ends up going 14. So somebody who isn't picked that I would consider in the top 14 is James Johnson, current Minnesota Timberwolf, who was actually taken 16th that year. So, just outside of the lottery, he was taken by Chicago out of Wake Forest. And he's one of, only like 7 or 8 guys in this first round that's still in the draft now. And I think he probably gets picked right around that same spot if you did a full redraft of the first round in that 14 to 17 range, because James Johnson has been on, at various points in his career, has been a solid 3-and-D guy who can guard basically play the four, but also guard threes and fives in some cases, and was a valuable piece of the Timberwolves after he was acquired just this past season. And I would imagine the Wolves plan on him being a part of the team moving forward. Of course, he's got that player option that he'll pick up. But just a fascinating draft. If you go through and look at some of the other names of guys that were taken later in the draft and had nice careers, Darren Collison, who just recently retired, Omri Caspi, same thing. Damari Carroll, Wayne Ellington was a Timberwolves pick that, and he struggled early in his career, but is now a solid 3-and-D player and probably would be picked in the top 20 if you kept picking through this draft. He would definitely be picked ahead of where he had been picked. Danny Green was a second round pick. Dante Cunningham, former Timberwolves second round pick. Patty Mills, both Simmons and Lowe talked about him probably being 15th or 16th if they kept drafting. Chase Budinger was in this draft, of course, had the injuries that ended his career, but another former Timberwolf, Patrick Beverley, I just mentioned, was taken 14th in the redraft and is, of course, still in the league. But some really interesting names as you go through, and just a fascinating draft to go back and look at, and a fun podcast to listen to. So if you have the opportunity, go listen to that on the either the Low Post on ESPN or the Book of Basketball 2.0. On the Ringer podcast network. Just a really fun conversation to have and to look back on. As disappointing as it is for Timberwolves fans that they ended up with arguably the most disappointing, or the player with the most disappointing career in that entire draft instead of a transcendent Hall of Famer in Steph Curry, still a fun draft to talk about, to be sure. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On podcast network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. On Monday, we will have the crossover podcast with Locked On Warriors and Locked On Pistons hosts talking about who the Timberwolves will take if they land the number 4 pick in the upcoming NBA draft and the reasoning why. We'll also talk about why some of the other teams picked who they picked in our redraft, or our, I should say our mock draft. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. Once again, today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order. Now, tell your smart device to go play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.